This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, that was an entertaining day. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we welcome you to NHL This Week, a special trade deadline edition of NHL This Week. Over the next 2 hours, we'll get you caught up on all the trades throughout what was a typically busy NHL trade deadline day. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you, your thoughts on the moves that were made over the course of today. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. All the Jets audio, in case you missed any of it throughout the course of the day, available on IllegalCurve.com.
We tried to move you, but unfortunately, there were no takers.
You could not even give me away for a box of donuts, Ezzy. Is that what you're telling me?
No, we didn't try to trade you, Drew. You're untouchable.
Yeah, I have a no move clause.
You think I can host this show?
I think you can do anything you set your mind to. I wouldn't have said you'd ever be able to get married, but here you are.
Positive thinking, right?
There you go. Positive affirmation, Ezzy. Let's get started, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets, and boy, did they make a splash today on trade deadline. It started earlier this morning when things were a little bit slow. We were all waiting for some of the bigger names to drop, and then lo and behold.
How many burgers did O-Dog have, by the way?
Jeff's great. I love Jeff on the trade deadline panel.
Good friend of the show.
Yeah, I know. He's fantastic on the panel trade deadline day. You can just see that this is a guy who's like, something happened. I don't have time to wait around here. Anyways, the Jets got things started when it was a little bit quiet, and then boom, Kevin Cheveldayoff makes a huge splash, acquiring Paul Stastny from the St. Louis Blues. Stastny, of course, a pending unrestricted free agent at season's end. In exchange, the Jets give up a 2018 first-round pick that is lottery-protected top three. That's not going to factor in. The Jets aren't going to drop into the lottery. That would be a remarkable collapse by the Winnipeg Jets.
There's 0% chance of that happening.
A conditional 2020 fourth-round pick and prospect Eric Foley. The conditions on that fourth-round pick, it only comes to effect if the Blues do not sign Eric Foley out of college. There's no expectation that that's going to happen. Everyone expects Foley likely to leave Providence College after this season. So basically, you're looking at a 2018 first-round pick and prospect Eric Foley for Paul Stastny, a guy whose name had not been bandied about whatsoever, a guy who nobody had any inkling was on the trade block. And then, lo and behold, the St. Louis Blues, they go out and lose 6 games in a row. We saw what the Jets did to them on Friday night in Missouri. And all of a sudden, Doug Armstrong puts the for sale sign up on the pending UFA that is Paul Stastny, and the Jets jump at the opportunity.
Well, Drew, you just mentioned that Stastny is a pending UFA. And I think most people thought that because the Blues are in the middle of a playoff race, and they weren't earlier, they were competing for the Central Division crown, but now they're, what, 1 or 2 points behind the Dallas Stars right now, and they're looking from the outside in, and many people thought that the Blues were just going to hang on to Stastny and then either sign him or he was going to become an unrestricted free agent and sign with another team. So, you know, you mentioned that Chevy made a splash. I don't think he made a splash. I think this is a tidal wave.
Is it a cannonball into a pool?
It's a cannonball, okay. Drew. When you talk about Paul Stastny, I mean, for me, Pierre LeBrun put it best. He said, back in 2014, the Jets, Kevin Cheveldayoff, really wanted to sign Paul Stastny as an unrestricted free agent. And obviously, he signed with the St. Louis Blues. But, I mean, this is a player who's been a second-line and first-line center for the Blues. Now, whether he slots in as that second-line center or a third-line center for the Jets remains to be seen. One thing we know is that he's not going to replace Mark Scheifele on the top line. And he's obviously not going to be a fourth-line center. He's so good. So, when you talk about where he's going to slot in, I think, you know, he fits in nicely, doesn't he, with Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine, whether that's the third line, Sean, or whether you want to call that the second line. But, I mean, this is a big move. When you can now throw out Scheifele, Little, Lowry, and Paul Stastny 1-4 down the middle, I mean, that puts you up there with any other team in the league, whether or not you agree with that or not. Certainly, you know, the Jets are set up the middle now, and they obviously have the ability to move Matthew Perreault or Andrew Kopp if they need to.
Blake Wheeler,
absolutely, Sean. So, I mean, this is an absolutely
in a desperate situation.
Yeah. Now, Sean, whether or not you think Stastny is going to re-sign with the Jets, that remains to be seen. I think they'd have to move some contract out, but for right now, it looks like a rental, but there always is the chance they sign him.
Yeah, the Jets aren't worried worried about that right now. Mm-hmm. That's something that you can cross that bridge when the season ends. The Jets now hope, of course, the season's going to end sometime in June. As opposed to mid-April. Yeah, as opposed to April, as it had been for the last number of years. Sean, it's sort of funny. All for the last, over the weekend, and maybe going back as far as Friday, we talked about how the Jets were in on Derek Brassard, and mm-hmm. then Vegas and Pittsburgh and Ottawa make the deal that they make, and Brassard ends up in Pittsburgh. And Brassard is certainly a offensively inclined centerman. You know, he's got the playmaking skills. He's got a lot of offensive talent. And then you heard maybe Saturday as a lot of conversation that the Jets were in on Thomas Plekanec mm-hmm. of the Montreal Canadiens, and we know that he ends up in Toronto, and Plekanec is more of a defensive centerman at this stage in his career. His offensive game isn't what it once was. He's certainly a veteran guy, towards the tail end of his career. Then today, the Jets go out and they get Stastny. And from my perspective, you're almost looking at the best of both Derek Brassard and Thomas Plekanec mm-hmm. in that, Stastny and Brassard are probably a wash offensively. Maybe you can say Brassard's a little bit ahead of Stastny at this stage in his career, but not a significant difference. Whereas Stastny is ahead of where Thomas Plekanec is at this stage in his career. So, for Kevin Cheveldayoff allegedly striking out on Brassard and then striking out on Plekanec, well, he certainly hit what many would say would be a Grand Slam home run with the count 0-2, getting Paul Stastny out of St. Louis in sort of the surreptitious manner he went about it with Doug Armstrong.
Great word, Drew.
Thank you.
That was a really, really good word. It was a very
play some Scrabble.
Not after he drops a surreptitious on us. That's like 50 points.
That's
if
a triple
drop,
word
if you drop
score.
A seven letter word. Anyways, exciting times this morning. We were kind of scrolling through Twitter, hoping something happens. Yeah. I didn't want to have to report on Ian Cole anymore. And sure enough, we get the press release from the Jets, and people around here are super excited. Apparently, word on the street. I haven't been outside much today, but people are pumped around the city. $7 million cap hit. St. Louis will retain half of that. So the Jets also works financially into the cap issues with them. And he shoots left. He's versatile. He plays power play. He plays penalty kill. And he's got a glut of knowledge around the NHL. He's been all over the league. He's an Olympian. And he's a guy that if you really listen to what Blake Wheeler, what head coach Paul Maurice, what Matt Hendrick said, he's just a guy that can impart a ton of wisdom to a young group who lacks playoff experience. And this is a guy who has played meaningful games for a majority of his career. He's played a lot of playoff games. And where has he spent the last, five seasons? Within the Central Division. Mm-hmm. So he's used to that grind, hard style play. He's not coming over from the East where there's going to be maybe an adjustment period as to the type of teams that they're going to be going up against. He's been in it. He's been in the muck of it. He's been in the playoffs. And it's an unbelievable addition, I think, for the Winnipeg Jets. Think Stastny, Laine, Ehlers is on your third line of potentially. That is nuts.
It's pretty scary for other teams. And I think the most important thing here, Drew, is, and we've talked about it for the last 3 weeks on the show, I didn't really think that the Jets needed to bring in a top six or top nine forward. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Kevin Cheveldayoff thought differently. And when you talk about, Paul Stastny, what's most important to me here is the Jets get better. Now Adam Lowry moves down to the fourth line when he gets back, and mm-hmm. Matt Hendricks is most likely going to be that 13th forward, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they get better here, and they don't give up a roster player to get better. Eric Foley, in my opinion, is at least 2 years away.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't going to step right in to the Winnipeg Jets lineup next year. Most likely he was going to start off with the Manitoba Moose. And I think the Jets can make this trade. They can give up a late first-round pick because they have Mason Appleton in the system, because they have Christian Veselainen in the system. Jack Roslovic is the same age as Eric Foley. He's already in the NHL right now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the Jets have the prospects. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're, void of prospects right now, so they can give up a first-rounder and Eric Foley. And you can always get that first-rounder back. I mean, you can get that pick back at the draft if you really want to. So as far as I'm concerned,
the Jets don't need it, I think, mm-hmm. anymore.
It was the right price to pay for a rental like this.
And the right time to pull the trigger on trading away your first-round pick. Because this is the, as you and I have had this debate, and Sean, we've had this debate on this show and on Saturday's show, and, the window, and, is the window just opening? Is the window, open wide? Is it open for a while? You never know just how quickly the window is going to close. And right now, you look around the Western Conference, and you look around the NHL, and there's no reason why the Winnipeg Jets aren't a Stanley Cup contender. And then you go and add Paul Stastny to the equation. And you say, well, now they're really a Stanley Cup contender. Because I don't know that sure, they would have been they're a very good hockey team, but I don't know that they could have matched up necessarily against the Nashville Predators without adding another piece to their top nine.
You know, another thing to mention, Drew, about Paul Stastny, you know, whether he plays with, you know, Ehlers and Laine, or if he ends up playing with Matty Perreault or Jack Roslovic, great faceoff guy. He's around 55% this year.
55.2%. That puts him 12th overall in the NHL. Brian Little is 9th. So you have two of your top 15 faceoff guys in the entire NHL that you would, you know, on key faceoff opportunities, you're probably going to see both Stastny and Little on the ice just in case one of them gets booted out.
Yeah, and Sean makes a really good point. I mean, he can play penalty kill. Mm-hmm. He can go out there and play power play. He's the type of guy that Paul Maurice can use on any line, really. Most likely it's going to be the second or third when you have Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor kind of entrenched on that first line, right?
Sure.
There's no reason to believe that that line's going to get broken up unless they start to struggle offensively at even strength. So I don't think there's anything really not to like about this trade.
It's a logical move by the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, you just sort of sit back and you say, yeah, that just makes a lot of sense. You know, this is a general manager in Kevin Cheveldayoff who oftentimes is, you know, he's got the reputation at least as being cautious, but he went out and he explored the marketplace and he saw the team that he has, which has been a very good team all season long, and you didn't think he was going to do anything, you know, earth-shattering, that he wasn't going to take anything off of the active roster, and he didn't. So you add in a guy like Paul Stastny, and sure, maybe Nick Petan isn't altogether happy about it because he's now back with the Manitoba Moose, but and maybe a guy like Brandon Tanev's not all that happy about it because he probably maybe loses his roster spot as well, and a guy like Matt Hendricks. Hendricks, of course, you know, has been around the NHL. He's been through these wars. He's going to take it in stride. He's going to do what he can to help the team, you know, in his new role. Tanev, I think, same thing. You know, there's never been any talk about them being anything other than professional. And you look at the team and you say, you know, you have the Stastny's familiarity with Blake Wheeler from when they played together in Germany during the lockout season. They share the same agent. This just seems sort of like a relatively seamless transition. Andrew Kopp goes back to playing a role he's better suited for. And Paul Stastny, I mean, he's going to teach Ehlers and Laine so much just by virtue of the fact that he's, you know, been around the NHL. He's been around the battles. He's been through the different wars, the hockey innuendo wars for so many seasons. This is just a logical addition to a Winnipeg Jets team that has designs on being a Stanley Cup contender.
And to go back to what I said before, guys, there's a good chance that this is a rental, but there is always the chance that he signs. I don't think you can discount that. And, you know, maybe you don't want to be paying Brian Little $5 million to be your third-line center. You don't want to be paying Paul Stastny to be your third-line center at $7 million a year.
But he's not going
to
get that much.
But there always is the chance. He's probably going to get six.
No, you think he's still going to get six at this point in his career?
What's he going to get? Four?
I was going to say around four.
I would think four, two, five.
Andrew Ladd got $6 million.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right, Andrew Ladd. And he's a centerman versus a winger there, so you might be
okay,
right.
Okay, well,
let's call
it $5 million.
Sure.
Let's go in the middle. So I don't think you want to be paying your third-line center $5 million a year. I don't know if you can afford that when Josh Morrissey's up.
You probably
can't.
When
Connor Hellebuck's up, when Jacob Trouba's up. You have a lot of players whose contracts are up.
It's certainly a problem for later on in the season or in the offseason for the Jets to figure out. But right now, a top three up the middle with Scheifele, Little, and Paul Stastny with Adam Lowry anchoring your fourth line when he's back to health is a pretty solid top four centerman, competitive with any of the great center groups throughout the NHL. When we come back, we're going to touch on the Jets' other addition, back-end defensive depth they get out of Montreal. We'll look at what the other teams in the Central Division did as well. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
It's kind of happened, you know, it's kind of a whirlwind. You know, I was getting ready for practice and got called into the coach's office. Didn't really know where I was going to go. Obviously knew something was going on, but I'm really excited. You know, it's a great team, obviously, you know, rivalry between both of us, and you know, it's a tough building to play in when you're the opposing team, but you know, I'm excited to be in there wearing the yellow and you know, playing in Nashville.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
That's the newest member of the Nashville Predators, former Chicago Blackhawks forward Ryan Hartman. Welcome back to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth tooting, visit Linden Market Dental Center. We'll get to the Hartman acquisition by the Predators in a moment. First, the Jets made one other trade. That's acquiring Joe Morrow, a left-handed defenseman from the Montreal Canadiens, in exchange for a 2018 fourth-round pick. We'd heard all week for the last couple of weeks that the Jets were in the market for a depth defenseman. They go out and they get that depth defenseman in Joe Morrow. Do you like that guy on the Jets' back end? Do you see him really getting much playing time unless there's injuries? Joe Morrow's got a guy who's got some playoff experience last year with the Boston Bruins. You heard Kevin Cheveldayoff talk about that earlier this afternoon on the afternoon ride.
Yeah, Joe Morrow is an interesting defenseman. He was part of the Tyler Seguin trade. He was a player that you would expect to kind of slot in as a number seven or number eight defenseman. But I mean, you mentioned, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff talked about Joe Morrow, and, you know, he's a guy that I think, you know, has some versatility. He can skate. He's got some decent offensive ability as well, but I don't think they're expecting him to come in here and play a top four role or anything like that. You nailed it, Drew. I mean, you're basically replacing, you know, Tucker Poolman or Julian Melchiori on the depth chart, and obviously Tucker Poolman's a right shot defenseman who can also play on the left side, but you don't give up a lot to get him. And you know, I like that acquisition. I mean, when you consider that the Jets have had some injuries on the back end over the last couple of years, obviously, you know, Jacob Trouba is the biggest one, but Tyler Myers last year only playing 11 games. I think it's similar to kind of what Pittsburgh did last year. They loaded up on veterans, and you wouldn't necessarily say Joe Morrow is a veteran, but Joe Morrow at 25 years old has played some games in the NHL. I think he's over 100 games in the NHL. So he's a guy that can definitely slot in, you know, on your third pair. Most likely you don't want him playing on your second pair, but, you know, that's just a good depth move for a team that we talked about that's hoping to go on a long playoff run.
Sean, your thoughts on Joe Morrow, the Jets? I mean, probably in an ideal situation, he's a black ace for the Jets from now through the end of the playoffs, but it's nice to be able to put a guy into the lineup that's got some playoff experience, who's played in some, you know, big games last year for the Boston Bruins, if push comes to shove and the Jets need to get into their seventh and eighth defenseman throughout the course of the playoffs and the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, you listen to what GM Kevin Cheveldayoff talked about today on the afternoon ride, and Huss asked him specifically about Joe Morrow, and he says, what we really liked about him, he's a good skater, he's got a decent head, he can move the puck, he made a crisp first pass, so that's all you really want from a defenseman. Somebody that knows their role, keeps things simple, as I assume Joe Morrow will do. I'm sure he's extremely motivated to come to a team that's primed and ready to do a little bit of damage. Regardless of whether he plays or not, he can offer some experience. He's been out, he spent some time out east, so he knows a little bit of the teams out east a bit more. And he's just a guy who, like you said, Drew, you hope not to see him, but if you do see him, he'll keep things simple. I assume he'll know his role, and he'll just get the forwards the puck. That's what we want from our defense now. Get the forwards the puck, stay back, defend, and let the big boys up front do the heavy lifting.
And we should mention, Joe Morrow was scratched, I believe, 23 times this year by the Montreal Canadiens. So, I mean, we should mention, I mean, the Winnipeg Jets are acquiring a defenseman here that does have some deficiencies. It's not like, you know, they're not acquiring
Bobby Orr here.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, and I'm not, you know, trying to knock Joe Morrow or anything like that. I'm just saying that, you know, he wasn't playing a top four or even top six role for the Montreal Canadiens.
For a bad team.
He was their seventh defenseman, eighth defenseman. So I wouldn't expect Joe Morrow to play a lot for the Jets unless they have some type of injury situation, which, you know, requires Joe Morrow to come into the lineup. But again, it really is that cliche, but you want to have that D depth when it comes to playoff time.
Well, you know, when you hear about what, you know, the Jets supposedly were in on Ian Cole, who ended up going to Columbus in exchange for a third round pick and a prospect, I think you're probably fine in taking Joe Morrow for that fourth round pick instead. I mean,
Ian Cole go for?
A third round pick and a prospect.
Yeah, Ian Cole's a better defenseman, and you know, he would most likely play a bigger role on the Jets if they acquired him.
But even if they did acquire him, let's say if the Jets had acquired Ian Cole, who's he bumping out of the lineup? I mean, is he bumping out anybody from the top
Probably
six?
Probably be Toby Enstrom.
Is he bumping Toby out, given how well he's played with Dustin Byfuglien as of late?
Well, when the Jets are healthy, he was the third-pairing defenseman. So I'm just saying, I mean, logically speaking, Toby Enstrom is third on the Jets.
Right, but I can see why the Jets necessarily don't want to, you know, right now Byfuglien and Enstrom are going as well as they've gone
they've
for the last
well.
Number
I'm
of years.
I'm just saying, I mean, they might look at that.
Yeah,
We're talking hypothetical. They didn't acquire Cole, so it doesn't really matter.
It really doesn't matter. So let's shift our focus to the Jets' primary rival in the Central Division. Because you know we're going to be talking about this for the next weeks to come, of course. The acquisition today of both Paul Stastny by the Jets and Joe Morrow. It's 25 minutes past the top of the hour. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN 1290. Ryan Hartman is acquired by the Nashville Predators. Ryan Hartman and a 2018 fifth-round pick to the Nashville in exchange for a 2018 first-round pick, a 2018 fourth-round pick, and prospect Victor Edsel, who I honestly don't know anything about.
So yeah, I don't know a lot about him
yeah,
either.
So yeah. I'm not even going to pretend on that one. Really, you're boiling this down to Ryan Hartman in exchange for a first-round pick. Is that a lot to pay? It seems like, from my perspective, that's a lot to pay for Nashville to acquire Hartman, albeit he's a guy who still has RFA years before he's going to hit free agency. So it's not a rental, but Ryan Hartman for a first-round pick is a little lopsided to me, and I think a pretty decent job by Stan Bowman.
Well, if you think about it, you're trading a first-round pick for a first-round pick. Ryan Hartman was a late first-round pick back in 2013, if you want to look at it like that.
Sure.
And you control him, right? It's not like he's a pending UFA. Mm-hmm. He's 23 years old, and I believe he's got 1 year left on his contract, if I'm not mistaken. And had a pretty good rookie year last year for Chicago. I was a little bit surprised, Drew, that they gave up a first-round pick, though, because we know that Nashville has already made a bunch of moves, right? So we didn't necessarily know that Nashville was going to make any moves. But Ryan Hartman's a good player. He most likely is going to slot in on that second-line or third-line wing. A really good player. He's got lots of speed. And we know that Nashville is loading up here. So in that sense, we shouldn't be surprised that they traded a first-rounder for Ryan Hartman, because it's Stanley Cup or bust for them.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that if they don't win the Stanley Cup, I mean, you know, they're doomed or anything like that. I just mean they went to the Stanley Cup final last year against Pittsburgh, so they've had a taste of that. They want to come home with the cup this year.
I mean, Hartman comes in. I would assume he moves Scott Hartnell down into a fourth line role. Hartnell been playing a little bit above probably where you want him to play, especially a guy with a lot of miles on him. As you get into the grind of the playoffs, you'd rather have Hartnell in a fourth line role. So I can see the need, and you can certainly see how Hartman comes in to help the Nashville Predators. I think you also have to make mention when you're. I mean, it's not a trade deadline acquisition, but Eli Tolvanen is set to come to Nashville before the end of the season, and we don't know the impact he's going to have, but we know the talent he has.
Yeah, we should mention, Drew, we talked to Adam Vingan on Saturday's show. As soon as the Continental Hockey League season is over, that's when Eli Tolvanen will join the Predators. So it's not going to happen this week, but it'll happen as soon as the KHL season's over.
Absolutely, I would agree with you there. It just seems like, you know, Hartman goes to Chicago, or pardon me, Hartman goes to Nashville. A logical move, whether or not you like the price they paid of the first-round pick and the prospect, and I don't know anything about the prospect, so I'm not going to touch on that part. They obviously deemed that Hartnell is worth the first-round pick to give up to add to their... probably their top nine there, and they have a pretty solid top nine as well. It's really an arms race in the Central Division now, given the moves the Jets made today and the moves that the Predators made as well.
Yeah, further to your point, and then Shawnee can get in here. I mean, your third line right now looks like Ryan Hartman, Nick Bonino, and Cale Yarncroke. And as far as I'm concerned, that's one of the best third lines in the league. And the Jets also, if they're able to now put, you know, Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers out there alongside Paul Stastny, that's a pretty good third line. And that's what you're seeing. I mean, contending teams are going to give up first-round picks to improve their forward core.
Because they're 28th, 29th, 30th, 31st overall. They're not, you know, top five, top 10 picks. You just don't
see that. They're project picks.
You don't see, you know, you'll never see a Martin Irat for Philip Forsberg trade again. Just because, I mean...
well, I hope not.
Yeah, because it's one of the worst trades in the history of the NHL. Let me ask you guys...
Even though he played in the Olympics and he looked pretty good.
Great.
For Czech Republic.
That's terrific.
Even though Canada beat them, they didn't get that bronze.
You know who looked better? Philip Forsberg, who didn't play in the Olympics, but he would have.
Well, Chris Kelly getting a contract.
He got a contract
Brian
as
Gionta.
Well. Brian Gionta got a contract. Let me ask you this quickly.
Good for the vets.
Mark Letestu was a member of the Nashville Predators for about 5 minutes. They acquired him from Edmonton before they flipped him to Columbus. What are your thoughts about it? Should the Predators have kept Letestu?
That was a weird trade.
Well, I have to believe that they acquired Letestu, simply so the Jets wouldn't acquire him.
And to get that draft pick.
Yeah.
Because they got a draft pick back from Columbus.
You got a fourth-round pick, so you don't really care about the fourth-round pick that much. Sure. So why did they acquire him if it's not to block another Western Conference team, maybe not the Jets, but they block another Western Conference team from acquiring him, knowing that they can flip him to Columbus immediately thereafter.
And we don't know how serious the Jets were in acquiring Mark Letestu. I mean, I'm not saying that they weren't after him. I just don't know.
I don't know either. I'm just speculating, looking at all the facts in front of me, that the Predators only acquired him. They obviously had no intents on keeping him, so they acquired him simply so another team wouldn't, and then they flipped him out east immediately. That's, you know, quickly, though, as before break, should they have held on to Letestu for longer and maybe don't acquire Hartman and get to hold on to their first-round pick as well? Would Letestu have fit in on Nashville?
Right, but you're talking about a center versus a winger.
Well, I know, but he can probably he's got some abilities to play either on either wing, or he can play on the wing as well as he can play center.
Right, but Nashville's so set up the middle. You mentioned Mike Fisher, who is a trade deadline acquisition.
He's back.
Sure,
he really is. But now
signed
the
$1 million prorated contract today.
Where does that leave Colton Sissons? Colton Sissons can also play on the wing, but he's been the fourth line center for Nashville, and I think he's one of the best fourth line centers in the league. Remember last year at one point he was the first line center
after Nashville, right?
So Sissons is an underrated player.
I just found the Letestu acquisition by Nashville.
It was odd. Yeah, there was a reason for that aside from acquiring Mark Letestu to flip him for a fourth round pick. I agree.
It was to block somebody else, I think, from acquiring Letestu. Yeah. When we come back, Josh Green is going to join us. You know, Josh, of course, is a hockey analyst here on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Monday evening, welcome back to a special trade deadline edition of NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. Frank is one guy who is very happy with the Jets' moves today, I can tell you that. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Josh Green. Josh is, of course, a TSN hockey analyst here on the station. You hear him on Jets pre- and post-game coverage. Josh, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good to be on with you guys.
Our pleasure to have you on with us, Josh. Obviously, a big day for hockey fans here in Winnipeg. Kevin Cheveldayoff pushing some of his chips into the middle of the pot with the acquisition of Paul Stastny. Let's start with that acquisition. When you heard that news come down earlier today, what were your thoughts of the Jets' acquisition of Paul Stastny?
Well, it kind of came out of nowhere for me. He wasn't a guy that was on the board or talked about in any trade talk. But when I heard it, I was excited about it because I know what kind of player he is. I know what he'll bring to this Jets team. He's a UFA next year, so obviously he's going to be a rental. But he brings so much to this team, in terms of, he's an elite playmaker. He's really, really good on faceoffs, and we heard Blake Wheeler talk about him and how good of a guy he is too. So he just checks off a lot of boxes for me and what the Jets need and how he's going to fit in. So I really like the move by Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Josh, you played in the league when Paul Stastny was first coming into the NHL with the Colorado Avalanche. When you consider Paul Stastny's skill set, do you think he fits well alongside Patrick Laine and Nick Ehlers?
Well, it'll be interesting. I think he's probably going to start there. But for me, speed maybe would be a bit of a question. But he is an elite playmaker, like I said, and I think that's what those guys want. So, just because those guys are fast and different type of players doesn't mean it's not going to be a fit. So I think you just have to, give it a few games and see if there is some chemistry. But he's a guy that's very versatile. He can move anywhere up and down the lineup. He can even play wing if they need him to. I don't think they brought him in for that. I think they brought him in for, to shore up that center ice position and add depth there. But I'm anxious to see how it's going to work out. It may not, and they may move some things around, but hopefully that's where he starts, and hopefully they have some instant chemistry.
Josh, Paul Maurice said something really interesting today in his press conference. He was talking about how, you know, he was posed the question about what kind of veteran knowledge a guy like Paul Stastny can provide to a pretty young Jets team. And he said something that I thought was pretty interesting. He said that a lot of the veteran coaching the youth takes place in-game on the bench. And I'm just wondering, how valuable is that information to a youthful team, to a guy that not only has been there, but individually, when you break down the way like players, like certain intricacies players have and opposing players, like how valuable is that knowledge for a young Jet team?
I think it's very valuable. And just look to like Matt Hendricks. He does that same sort of thing for some of the young guys, the in-game stuff, being able to sit next to a guy on the bench after a shift and have him in your ear talking to you about some of the things you did good, maybe some of the things that you can look for or work on. So I think Paul Stastny will bring a little bit of that as well. And he's played 805 games in the league, and he's got 55 playoff games, so he has some experience, and he has a wealth of knowledge, and I think the young guys in this team are going to be able to lean on him.
And I'm not saying that, you know, Matt Hendricks doesn't provide that same knowledge, but just, I don't want to say, does it give him a little more credibility that he's more of a skilled player, and, you know, he's been there, he's an Olympian, he's dug through the playoffs. Does that add a little more credibility to some of the Jets? The talent that they have on the team?
Yeah, like I think he'll be able to relate a little bit better to maybe the top-end guys. Hendricks, you know, with some of the fourth-line guys like a Tanev, like a Kopp, those type of guys, I think they can draw stuff from him. And I think that Ehlers and Laine will be able to lean on Stastny a lot just because he's been through it. Like you mentioned, he's an Olympian. He's played in the playoffs. He's been on a long run there, and he's played so long in the NHL. So, like I said, he's got a lot of knowledge about the game and the NHL and little intricacies of the game that I think some of the younger, upper echelon players on the Jets will be able to use and lean on the likes of Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, Laine. Like, they got some young guys up front. So I think adding a veteran piece like him is going to be huge.
Josh Green is our guest on NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Josh, you know, there's been a lot of talk for the last couple of weeks around this team about expectations. And Blake Wheeler, you know, sort of poured cold water on it, saying we haven't done anything, we haven't made the playoffs. And then Paul Maurice came out and said, you know, embrace this opportunity. You know, the expectations are, you know, you guys have played well, so embrace the opportunity to be considered a high, upper echelon NHL team. You know, from your perspective, you've been through so many battles in professional hockey. When a player of this stature is added to a dressing room, an already pretty good dressing room, some would say a very good team adds another very good player, what does that do to the dressing room in terms of expectations? Does that give the dressing room a jolt? Does that make people maybe grip their sticks a little tighter? How does the addition of a solid veteran like Paul Stastny affect the locker room?
Well, I think it'll send a message right through the room that, you know, we're in it to win it here this year, and bringing in a guy like that is going to do that. Hopefully it gets the energy level up on the players, gives them a little jolt, like you said. I wouldn't expect them to be squeezing their sticks and being nervous because all of a sudden we add a player and now we're expected to go on this long run. I think they already expected that. And, you know, you talked about Blake Wheeler and the expectations, and, you know, that's just the way it is. When you play in a Canadian market like this and you have the season you're having, of course people are going to expect you to win and go on a long run. So hopefully they can feed off that pressure and thrive on it and, like I said, go on a long run and create some energy in the room and in the city.
You know, Josh, Drew just mentioned you had a lengthy pro career. You played over 300 games in the NHL. Your career just ended last year in the Finnish league. What's it like for players in that dressing room? Sticking in the dressing room, you know, back to Drew's question, what's it like for players? Do they pay attention to the trade deadline, or has it kind of changed a little bit with social media and guys checking their phones all the time, Twitter and all of that?
They pay attention to it, no question about it. And, you know, I'm sure they were wondering if they were going to add a piece. There was a lot of talk heading into it. For me, if they're saying that they didn't pay attention to it, it didn't even cross their mind, I believe they're lying, because I always thought about it when I was playing. I was always a piece that was probably going to get thrown into a deal or put on waivers, so it weighed on my mind, no question about it. So they're thinking about it. They're checking it all the time and wondering who they're going to add, who's going to leave, especially when they get close to deadline time. But I think now that it's passed and they've got their pieces, their team is set, that they can just put that all behind them now and just play and look forward to the future.
Josh, we really heard nothing about the name Paul Stastny being available either to the Jets or any other team for that matter. But the way things transpired over the weekend for St. Louis, do you think that kind of flipped a switch for their management team and they just decided, all right, this is not our year. We got to do something to make a move because we aren't going anywhere anytime fast?
Yeah, honestly, I think it's a smart move for them. They're fading fast, and I just look at the teams around them in the standings. Like, you know, they're on the outside looking in, and you know, Calgary's there, LA's there. It's going to be hard for them to get in. I think they noticed they were on a downward trend, and you know, I think it's a smart move to, you know, you get rid of Paul Stastny, who's a UFA. You get some pieces back, and he may end up signing back there in the summer, and you get him back plus all these pieces you added from the trade. So. I think that, you know, it can go one of two ways, but I think that they sensed an opportunity to maybe add some pieces, a draft pick, a young player that can help in the future. So it's a tough sell to the players in that room, though, because, you know, they are only 2 points out and they feel like they have a good team. But I think that's part of the job of a general manager is to figure those things out, which way they're going to go. And maybe if they think that this isn't our year, maybe the future is a little bit brighter, then that's probably the way they need to go.
Josh Green is our guest on NHL This Week. Josh is, of course, a Jets analyst here on TSN 1290. Josh, you now look at the Jets top nine, and it's, you know, pretty stacked, 1 through 9. And then you compare them against their chief rivals in Nashville. They acquired Ryan Hartman, and then in Vegas, who they acquired Thomas Tatar. How do you think the Jets match up on their top three lines versus the Golden Knights and the Predators?
I think they're right there. I think they're top nine rivals, any team in the league, and not just the West. And down the middle, especially for me, it was important for them to add a piece there, because you look at Nashville, they've got Johansson, they got Turris, Bonino, Colton Sissons, who had a great playoff last year, and then also Mike Fisher, who they signed too. So the depth that they have in Nashville is very strong, and Vegas, we all know about the season they're having and who they have, the type of team that they have, the speed and everything. So I think it was important for Winnipeg to make a move to match these teams and let them know, like, hey, we're here, we're for real, we're going to be there at the end.
You know, Josh, could this day have gone any better for the Jets? Kevin Cheveldayoff and Paul Maurice, they acquire Paul Stastny, they acquire a depth defenseman in Joe Morrow for a fourth-round pick, and Jacob Trouba's back on the ice skating now.
Yeah, you talk about the pieces they just add, Stastny and Morrow, but the pieces they're going to get back from injured reserve, I think, are going to help even more. You know, you're going to get Lowry back, Tanev's going to come back, and then you mentioned Jacob Trouba skating again. So they've got a lot of pieces coming into this lineup that are going to help them. And I like that they didn't do too much at the deadline. They added the one big piece in Stastny, but for the most part, the team stays the same because they have played so well together with this group of guys in their lineup. So the way it shapes out right now, I love the look of the team. I love the depth, and it seems like they're poised to go on a long run.
Well, the fans in Winnipeg certainly hope that's the case. It starts tomorrow night with the Nashville Predators. Talk about straight from the frying pan into the fire, from the trade deadline right into your arrival with your game with your chief rival at home tomorrow night. It ought to be a great one. Josh Green, TSN analyst here on TSN 1290. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Josh. Thanks again. It's going to be a great game tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place with the Jets and the Predators. You know that both teams are amped up a little bit more, given that both are sort of doing battle in the arms race that is the Western Conference.
Yeah, and good thing Mark Letestu isn't on the Predators, because he'd probably score against the Jets.
He scored already tonight for the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah. Him and Chris Versteeg, the Jets killers.
Well, there you go. Don't have to worry about that at this point in time. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Pacific Division, check in to see what some of those teams have done at the NHL trade deadline. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Thomas Tatar, what does Thomas Tatar do for the Western race for a Vegas team that's already first in that conference?
He can score a goal. I mean, everybody can use that. It's the toughest thing to do in the NHL. And that's what it's not like Vegas needed help in the goal-scoring department, but they're adding more of it. I like it. You add talent, it's always a good thing. It pumps up your room, energizes everybody. The price? I'm not sure about that.
But did have some
he's a talented
to
hockey player.
But that's rich for me.
Jeff O'Neill, Jamie McLennan, the panel this afternoon on TSN, breaking down the Vegas Golden Knights acquisition of Thomas Tatar.
Is there ketchup on that, Drew?
Did you see the video that they made specifically about the is there ketchup on that incident from last year?
I did
year?
See that.
It was pretty funny. I'll tell you what, some of the, you know, you got to fill a lot of hours. You're filling 8 hours of coverage there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's not a lot of trades sometimes. So some of the funny videos they produce are pretty good.
Yeah.
The behind the scenes about is there ketchup on that, it was quite dramatic. It was a bit of a tearjerker. It's available on TSN.ca.
Well, watching O'Dog eat Harveys was amazing.
That was pretty
funny. The Prime Minister race is always great.
The Prime Minister race, yeah. They've actually done, you know, filling an 8-hour broadcast like that, they've done a good job with it.
Wasn't Daryl Sutter on today?
He was.
Daryl was on today. Yeah. He didn't bring a ton to the table, I'm going to say. A man of few words, as you might already know. Didn't really open up on television, I would suggest. Anyways, welcome back to NHL This Week.
I'm going to tell Sutter you said that, by the way.
He might very well wake me up and just start spearing me while I'm asleep or something.
He might be a man of few words, but when he does speak, he has to be one of the best quotes of all time.
Well, in what he doesn't say.
You exactly.
Know, so, because he's a man of few words.
You don't ask Daryl Sutter a stupid question.
You will feel
he'll
stupid.
Because he'll give you an answer and make you feel stupid.
Very stupid. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Over the past 20 years, Keener Jerseys has established itself as one of the best jersey customizers in the world. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. For more information, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, do you get a Paul Stastny jersey?
Number 25 for the record. Paul Stastny is going to be wearing number 25.
But you get that jersey knowing that he might not re-sign.
Probably not. That would be a bold move you'd be making. Paul Stastny, number 25, Joe Morrow, following in the footsteps of the legendary John Albert, going to be wearing number 70 for the Winnipeg Jets.
Thomas Steen's old number.
John Albert.
Thomas Steen's old number was number 25.
Yeah.
Not number 70.
No, but going back to what you were saying about Stastny.
Yes, but I'd moved on past that to talk about Joe Morrow.
What number is he wearing?
Number 7. You weren't listening at all, were you? Number 70. 70. John Albert wore number 70.
Yep.
Now Joe Morrow's going to wear number 70. And yes, Paul Stastny's going to wear number 25, which was Thomas Steen's number. You are correct.
What did Dave used to call John Albert?
Pure energy. Yeah, it was something to do from a TV show. I don't remember what show.
I'm not going to get into my nickname that I had for John Albert, but let's continue.
Let's continue, indeed. Talk about what the Golden Knights did. They made a number of moves. They acquired Thomas Tatar from the Detroit Red Wings.
Yep.
They acquired Philip Home from the Vancouver Canucks. And earlier in the week, of course, they acquired Ryan Reeves and a 2018 fourth-round pick from the Pittsburgh Penguins.
As part of the Brassard trade.
The price they paid for Philip Home was Brendan Leipzig, Winnipegger, of course, who goes from a great situation to, he would make it playing time in Vancouver, so that's good.
Travis Green coached him in Portland. You know Drew.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's unfortunate in the sense that Vancouver's not going to go to the playoffs, but Brendan Leipzig is in his early 20s. He has a great career in front of him.
Time.
He gets to go play with Brock Besser and Bo Horvat, so nothing wrong with that.
He needs an opportunity, but Thomas Tatar is the big acquisition for the Golden Knights. They give up a 2018 first-round pick, a 2019 second-round pick, and a 2021 third-round pick.
Now, don't the Golden Knights have another first-rounder? Or is that their only first-rounder?
I think that's their only first-rounder. I'd have to double-check. Oh, look.
Okay, but
Your thoughts on the price to pay for Thomas Tatar?
It's pretty high, Sean, because Thomas Tatar is making $5.3 million a year, and he has 3 years left on his contract after this year.
And he hasn't been very good.
Well, I mean, who on Detroit has?
Nobody.
Right? I mean, Thomas Tatar is a great player, though. I mean, I think he has 30-goal upside. And he scored 20 goals in the league before. So, I mean, I think Thomas Tatar is a great player. But you gave up a lot to get him. And you're already a good offensive team. So that one puzzled me a little bit.
Yeah, that one puzzled me as well. Because if you're looking at the Golden Knights, you would say that what they're probably looking to do, you probably think they need more help on the back end than they do necessarily up front. But I guess they look around and they see what Nashville's doing and they see what Winnipeg's doing. And those are their two primary rivals.
Just checking the stats, 4 years ago he had 29 goals. I mean, he's still got 16 goals, Drew.
Yeah, he's got 28 points in 62 games this year. So you're talking about a guy who's probably this year a 40-point guy. Maybe he can get back to his 55-point total that he had a couple years ago. But in any event, I thought it was a high price to pay for the Golden Knights to acquire?
It's a high price because they're already loaded with offensive talent. That's not – as far as I was concerned, I thought they'd get a defenseman.
That's what I'm saying. If you look
apparently
at their roster –
apparently they were after Carlson.
Well, that's what you hear is that –
serious that was.
Well, it sounds like it got pretty serious, that they were the team that was in it talking to the Ottawa Senators right up until close to the deadline about
Eric
Carlson.
That Ottawa was asking for Shea Theodore, or they might have been asking for Cody Glass. We have no idea.
I'm sure they were asking for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, multiple first-round picks.
Eric Brandstrom.
Yeah, I'm sure they were asking for absolutely everyone. If you're the Golden Knights, and of course Eric Carlson would have been, you know, well, words can't say, you know, what acquiring Eric Carlson would have meant to that team. You know, this whole season's been a dream for the Golden Knights. But Tatar for that price, it seems to me that they were so focused on Carlson, and then maybe that became that it wasn't going to come to fruition with only a few minutes left, and the Red Wings asked for the moon for Tatar, and George McPhee maybe panicked a little bit and gave them that moon for Tatar.
Yeah, I don't know if I wouldn't say maybe that he panicked, but look at what the San Jose Sharks had to give up for Evander Kane. I mean, basically nothing. What, a second rounder and a fourth rounder?
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
And a prospect?
Well, yeah.
And not a top prospect. So when you're talking about, you know, what the Vegas Golden Knights gave up for Thomas Tatar, I think, you know, you get a player that you know you control for at least 3 years, right? Even though he's probably making a little bit too much. Let's be honest. I mean, this was a salary dump for Detroit.
Except it wasn't. It was a salary dump.
Well,
it should have been a salary dump.
It's a salary dump in the sense that they obviously wanted to get rid of Tatar. I mean, why else would you want to get rid of Tatar aside from shedding that salary? He's a great player, and Detroit doesn't have many great players.
That's my point, though, is that if you're just trying to get rid of him and you want somebody to take on a bad contract, it usually doesn't require that team to pay you a first-round pick, a second-round pick, and a third-round pick. Ken Holland, I think, did a great job here for the Red Wings.
The third-round pick, by the way, is 3 years from now.
2021. Yeah, they staggered
it's
the
rare,
picks.
Rare that you see picks 3 years from now.
They staggered it, so there's no significant impact, you know, year after year after year. By the way, the Golden Knights do not have another first-round pick. This is the only first-round pick that they have in this upcoming draft. So, to me, it's a high price to pay, and I still think the Golden Knights are a notch below the Predators and the Jets, and I know the Golden Knights have been a great story this year, but I can't help but go back and look at the fact that the Golden Knights have been able to play the Canucks, the Oilers, and the Coyotes 15 times this season. I think they're a good team. I don't think they're as good as the Predators are and as good as the Jets are.
Sure. I mean, you're not going to get any argument from Sean or I about that. The Pacific Division is the third or fourth best division in the NHL, and we're talking about four divisions, so that's not very good. But, I mean, the Central and the Metro, Drew, are much better than the Pacific and the Atlantic. You're right. So, you know, maybe those numbers are inflated a little bit when you consider their record, especially at home, but I mean, Thomas Tatar fits right in to the Golden Knights to play devil's advocate. I mean, he's a fast player. They have a lot of speedy wingers there. We know how good Jonathan Marchessault has been this year. James Neal has had a nice season. I mean, this is a really good team. As far as I'm concerned, the Vegas Golden Knights are not an expansion team. The Minnesota Wild and the Columbus Blue Jackets did not get to select the type of players that the Golden Knights got to select. And if you pay $500 million, I mean, that's what you get, right?
Sure.
The NHL decided to change those rules. So I think we have to stop saying they're an expansion team.
Right.
They're a good hockey team.
But, Sean, from your perspective, should the Golden Knights have gone out and acquired a defenseman, maybe more than a forward in this case? I mean, their top line is pretty good now. You know, you add in a guy like Thomas Tatar to that top nine, and it's a pretty decent top nine. You got some talent there, so not taking anything away from them. But the back end looks like it's probably giving up a little bit more than it should be when you compare it to both the Predators and the Jets.
Definitely, and yeah, just looking at the forwards compared to the defense, you would have to assume that the defense is the area that you would have to address prior to the forwards going forward. I mean, just from a depth perspective alone, but it's really interesting to me how the narrative has changed with Vegas this year. They entered the season. There's so much uncertainty. There was talk, we're just going to stockpile. We'll go through the season, and at the trade deadline, we'll see where we are. And if lo and behold, we're tanking, we'll stockpile a bunch of draft picks so we can rebuild for the future. But they're leading the West and the league, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I don't think they're leading
the league.
Just the West.
So maybe they're thinking, maybe the narrative, maybe the story has changed. Maybe we give up a couple of these draft picks, bring in some more potent offensive talent, and see if we can make some history this year.
Look, I get why they became a buyer, and once they were performing so well, there would be no reason for them to all of a sudden be a seller. You're on a magical mystery ride, and you might as well go for it for as long as you possibly can.
They really are, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny turn of phrase, but they really are on a magical mystery ride for a bunch of cast-offs and rejects to be playing this well. So, you know, you say to the dressing room, we believe in you guys. You've been doing it for six months. Here's another piece to in your toolbox. Here's another tool for you to use. Keep it going.
Yeah,
by the way, there's no reason they can't win the Pacific.
Oh, no.
They could very easily win the Pacific. I don't think they're going to win the West because I think that either Nashville or the Jets are going to knock them off.
Right, and San Jose and Anaheim have caught up a little bit. But absolutely, they've been leading the Pacific for most of the year, right? If not all of the year. So I agree with you on that defense. I mean, I look at that defense, and not only do I not think it's as good as the Jets or the Predators, I don't think it's as good as the Ducks or the Sharks or a few other teams. The Blues have a better top four, top six defense than the Golden Knights do, and they don't have, quote-unquote, number one defenseman, but Shea Theodore is a really good defenseman.
Sure,
Shea and Theodore. Derek Englund has done a nice job kind of, you know, on that second, third pair. Nate Schmidt came over from Washington. He's a good, solid defenseman. Lucas Abiza is an underrated defenseman. Colin Miller has done a nice job there. So they don't have that, quote-unquote, number one defenseman like a Drew Doughty or a Ryan Suter or some of those other teams in the Central Division, but or Jacob Trouba or Josh Morrissey even. But, you know, that defense has done a pretty good job there for Gerard Gallant. So is that defense good enough going into the Stanley Cup playoffs? We'll find out. But one thing is for certain, Drew, as you mentioned earlier, every time we doubt the Vegas Golden Knights, they just keep winning. So,
yeah, doubt them at your own peril.
Exactly. Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the Atlantic Division. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our trade deadline special. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Right now, the fact that Carlson stays, you had all said at this point in time, you know, you had to try to get it done, but obviously Pierre Dorion did not get the offer he needed.
Good luck to the media relations guy for the Ottawa Senators, because every day it's going to be, we want to talk to this guy. You know, what are your thoughts? Do you want to get traded? Where do you want to go? It's going to be a circus there. And it's going to be uncomfortable for everybody.
I think they feel that they can wait that out. That's the one thing. There's 6 weeks left in their season. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it's early April, you're done. And they probably didn't get the deal that they wanted. So you can wait that out, revisit it at the draft. But that's the one thing. I think you weigh against it to get it done just for the sake of getting it done. You got to get it right.
More from Jamie McLennan and Jeff O'Neill earlier this afternoon on the TSN Trade Center panel. Welcome back to NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN 1290.
The Grit Grinders.
The Grit Grinders. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook at bernsteinsdeli.com. And of course, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli has got all your big screen TVs, great food and drink specials. It's hashtag hockey night at Bernstein's.
I had 5 Illegal Curve sandwiches for lunch today.
Yeah, just getting prepped for the trade deadline and everything else.
Yep. I was really hungry because I didn't have breakfast. So
five sandwiches is a totally reasonable thing to eat for lunch.
I usually eat 3, but I just needed those extra 2 today, Drew.
Just got to make sure you got a carb up. You know, that's good
carb
thinking.
Load.
Yeah, that's just good thinking.
Bulk up.
Yeah. Ottawa Senators, don't trade Erik Karlsson. It sounds like
I told you. Go back to Saturday. I told you.
Great. Way to go out on a limb there. It sounds like it got close. It didn't actually happen. It now, our focus, of course, extends to the draft, where everyone expects that he might go then, although Pierre Dorion, of course, came out today and said that on July 1st, if Erik Karlsson's still a member of the Ottawa Senators, Dorion will be offering him a contract, which is no surprise. Why wouldn't he?
He'll offer him a blank check.
He'll offer him a blank check and say, fill in the numbers. And
great
Karlsson,
movie.
I suspect, will say, no, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm going to go somewhere else. So are you surprised that Karlsson didn't get done today at all?
Nope, no, I'm not.
You just thought there's no urgency for Pierre Dorion to rush into something?
That, Drew, and I didn't think that he would get enough for Erik Karlsson. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
That's why, and I thought it made more sense to wait until the draft.
Well, then,
but it looks like the Vegas Golden Knights were pretty close.
Sounds like they were close.
And Tampa was in there, too?
Tampa was in there, supposedly, but then they went out and they made their own huge splash. Yeah. And boy, oh boy, does this Tampa Bay Lightning team look like an absolute dynamo now.
Well, Josh Green tweeted this out earlier today. How are they not the preeminent favorite?
Oh, they are. They are.
Well, I mean, the only other team you would make an argument about is probably the Pittsburgh Penguins, but I would still say Tampa Bay. Let's just go through the trade in case anybody's just joining us now at 5 after 7 here on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week. Ryan McDonagh and JT Miller from the New York Rangers, they go to the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for Vladislav Namestnikov. He's set to be an RFA at season's end. Brett Howden, who, of course, is from Manitoba and you know was a first-round pick of the Lightning.
Former Moose Jaw Warrior.
Yeah, Libor Hájek, who is a...
Don't know who that is.
He's a second-round pick formerly of the Lightning. He plays defense in the Western Hockey League, I believe for Moose Jaw, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow, well, maybe I should know that.
You know, you should. You're a WHL kind of guy. A 2018 first-round pick. And a second round pick that's conditional will become a first round pick if the Lightning win a Stanley Cup this year or next year. So it's a first round pick, a second round pick that could be a first round pick, a roster player in the Namestnikov, a guy who's only 25 years old, and we know how talented he is. Brett Howden and Libor Hájek, who are the two prospects involved in the deal, you know, both well thought of within the Lightning organization.
It's a fun name to say, Libor Hájek.
In exchange for Ryan McDonagh and JT Miller. Hájek, of course, played for Czech Republic at the latest World Juniors, had a very good tournament there as well. McDonagh and Miller, I mean, are these great acquisitions for the Tampa Bay Lightning? I mean,
yeah, of course they are.
I can see how... You're probably a little nervous about deleting the Namestnikov from your lineup.
Yeah, but you're getting Ryan McDonagh. And you're getting JT Miller.
Exactly.
So I mean, Namestnikov has been great for the Tampa Bay Lightning this year.
But it's not that JT Miller is some slouch.
JT Miller is a really good player. I mean, the key piece here is Ryan McDonagh, and that's not to take anything away from JT Miller. And yeah, you give up some good prospects. Brett Howden is a top prospect, and Libor Hájek, you mentioned as well, you know, is coming off a good World Junior tournament, but Ryan McDonagh now slots into their top four.
Yeah.
And so a good Lightning defense just becomes better now, and this was already the favorite to come out of the East and represent the East in the Stanley Cup final, and we know what Ryan McDonagh can do. He's been doing it for years for the New York Rangers. Big, solid defenseman, good offensively. They already have Victor Hedman there. They already have Mikhail Sergachev there. They already have Braden Coburn there. I think this is a really good group of defensemen, and they just get better. So I really like that move. Do they have to give up a lot? Sure, they have to give up a lot. But JT Miller comes back the other way. He's most likely going to be on that second or third line. He can also play on the top line. Very versatile player, JT Miller.
They have to give up a lot, but they don't give up Braden Point. They don't give up Mikhail Sergachev. They don't give up Cal Foote. I mean, as good as Howden is, you know, projected to be.
I missed Anton Strahlman in there, by the way. Anton Strahlman is their second best defenseman.
It's basically
aside from
the
Victor
New York
Hammond.
Rangers defense exactly. 3 years
and
ago.
And Dan Girardi.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. It's the Rangers defense from 3 years ago with Victor Hedman.
And Dan Girardi used to play with Ryan McDonagh. So, I mean, I would expect Ryan McDonagh to be on the second pair or third pair. So you might have him paired up with Dan Girardi again. But the point is, this Lightning blue line, with the exception of maybe Nashville, is probably the best in the league.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to think that they're not comparable with the Nashville Predators defense. And up the middle, I mean, up front, you have two of the best players in Stamkos and Kucherov. Braden Point has been an absolute revelation in that he's becoming a top-flight NHL centerman, two-way top-flight NHL centerman.
Yep.
There's not a lot of weakness there for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I don't know about you guys, but I very much would look forward to a Tampa Bay Lightning-Pittsburgh Penguins Eastern Conference Final, if that's what it ends up being.
I was thinking that exact same thing. You just look...
Sorry, Sean, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just looking at the depth and then adding a guy like JT Miller, who always impresses me every time the Jets play the Rangers. He's a guy that always stands out, usually pops a couple. And then, yeah, you're talking about the defense. It has to be one of the scariest decors in the East.
Yeah, but to that point, though, of all the great praise that going to the Tampa Bay Lightning, it's not like the Boston Bruins did nothing at this trade deadline.
They did a lot as well
to try and keep pace with the Tampa Bay Lightning, acquiring Rick Nash. That happened over the weekend in exchange for a 2018 first-round pick, Ryan Spooner, Matt Bolesky, who's just a salary dump, basically. Mm-hmm. Ryan Lindgren, and then a seventh-round pick. No big deal there. They get a depth defenseman, more than a depth defenseman, in Nick Holden. He's a pretty solid defenseman from the New York Rangers in exchange for Rob O'Gara and a 2018 third-round pick. So it seems to me like the Lightning and the Bruins have taken a step above the Toronto Maple Leafs, who also were active in acquiring Thomas Plekanec and Kyle Bonn from the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for Kirby Reichel, Renat Valiev, and a 2018 second-round pick. So that Atlantic division, which has been so top-heavy all season long, continues to be top-heavy in that both all three of those teams have done a lot to bolster their lineup. But to me, Ezzy, it's still the Lightning ahead, then the Bruins, then the Maple Leafs.
Well, just going back to the Lightning, this is the Lightning top six. I mean, we just talked about it, but these are what the pairings would most likely be.
Yeah.
Your top pair is Victor Hedman and Anton Strahlman.
Yeah.
Your second pair is most likely now going to be Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi. Mikhail Sergachev has been on that second pair. So now your third pair is Mikhail Sergachev and Andre Schuster, and Braden Coburn might be your seventh defenseman, or it's maybe Schuster. So that top six is very scary. Mm-hmm. If you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Pittsburgh Penguins, I still think, have to be a Stanley Cup favorite, even though mm-hmm. I think the Lightning and the Predators have really now passed them. But anytime you can roll out Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, Letang, we know all those big names, right, and they're the defending two-time Stanley Cup champions.
Well, the Lightning now have the defensive pairings to go up against the Pittsburgh Penguins' exactly. top three centermen.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Drew.
And that's what you saw at this trade deadline, I think, more than anything else, is you saw a team make a move, and then you saw, you know, their chief rivals or their chief competition make a counter move. It was very much a chess match. Oftentimes it's just moves are being made and pieces are being shuffled with no real thought, you know, from some of the favorites. But here, throughout the course of these last week, 10 days, you really saw teams make moves and help other teams out so that their opponents don't get players. And it was definitely much more strategic than I mm-hmm. think you often see at the NHL trade deadline.
Yeah, they were playing chess this year, not checkers.
Definitely were playing chess. And, I mean, the Lightning are stacked. The Pittsburgh Penguins, and we'll talk about them coming up when we look at the Metropolitan Division here, they're stacked up. The Bruins, I mean, the Bruins have to be saying, hey, why aren't we getting any credit? We went and got one of the best UFA wingers on the market in Rick Nash, a guy, you know, albeit a little bit older, but still a guy who, you know, is going to play, you know, he's not going to play, obviously, on that top line, but that's okay. The Bruins don't need him on that top line. That top line is probably the best line in hockey, if not one of the best lines in hockey. So there's just a lot of...
It's a very good line.
Yeah, I mean, that's Bergeron, Krejci, and Marchand.
Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak.
Sorry, Pasternak. Krejci is on their second line.
Rick Nash is now going to play with David Krejci and whoever. I mean, throw in Jake DeBrusque has been on that second line. This Bruins team is scary. Mm-hmm. That East, even though I think the Western Conference is better than the East, the top three teams in the East right now are scary good.
Well, I think what you have is you have in the West, and we'll talk about this over the next weeks and month probably as we head into the playoffs. You have a clear top three in the West of the Predators, the Jets, and the Golden Knights in no particular order.
I wouldn't even put the Golden Knights in there, but
for conversation's sake, because they're going to come out of there, they have to play.
I guess you have to, but I think the Jets and Preds are above.
I agree
them.
With you,
and
but
you mentioned that earlier.
I agree with you, but they have to come out of that Pacific Division bracket, so some team has to come out of there, and then you have the East, where you again have a sort of a upper echelon teams in the Lightning and in the Penguins, and maybe you want to throw the Washington Capitals in there too. I'm not 100% sure what you think about the Capitals, but we'll talk about that.
How wide open are the playoffs going to be, Drew? When you consider that the Columbus Blue Jackets might not even make the playoffs.
Well, I don't know that they're wide open from the upper echelon teams, but I don't know that any of those teams that are in that second pair, that second grouping underneath the upper echelon teams, can knock off an upper echelon team.
In the East or West? I think it can happen in either conference.
I don't know if it can happen in the East. I don't know if one of the wild card teams in the East can do it, and I don't know. I really don't think any of the wild card teams in the West can do it.
But it goes back to what I said off air. Who expected Toronto to almost take Washington to seven games last year? And Washington was a 117-point team last year,
yeah,
or 118 points, whatever they had, and Toronto almost beat them.
Well, you know, Washington's atop the Metropolitan Division, and we haven't said a word about them, and they were pretty quiet today at the mm-hmm. trade deadline. So I'll tell you what, why don't we go to break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about the Capitals, we'll talk about the Metropolitan Division, and we'll show you why the New York Rangers and general manager Jeff Gorton are an example of how you rebuild a team in this day and age in the NHL. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Well, and now there'll be some who are critical of the deal overall because arguably it's void of the name guys that, you know, you could have predicted would have had to have been part of a deal. You know, Tampa Bay was not giving up Braden Point. I mean, they just weren't as part of this package. And from a New York Rangers perspective, even though the name guys aren't included in this return, the New York Rangers are thrilled with what they got because, again, in the bigger picture...
Nemetikov's 25.
I mean, no, that's what I mean. It's about the rebuild in New York, right? Yeah.
Darren Dreger, Gord Miller talking at the TSN panel, a Trade Center panel, earlier today. It's amazing. We've spent so much time leading up to this day, so much excitement, so much analysis, and then it hits you, and it's just a chaotic day. Gord's back from South Korea. He made it back in time. Ray, I think, has apparently landed, so he's back in time. Wasn't able to make it on the panel in time for the
time change.
Loved listening
to Ray in Pyeongchang. He was great.
Yeah. Him and Cuthbert and
you've
and
said
Gordon
it before, Miller. Best analyst in the game, right?
Not even a close competition, in fact.
I agree.
Anyways, and he's going to be doing some Jets games, I understand, in the next couple weeks, so you can look forward to that. Ray Ferraro on the Jets broadcast is always there.
Josh Green's pretty good, too.
Josh Green's very good, too.
Trevor Kidd. I mean, we've got some good analysts
here. You've got some good analysts. No complaining about that whatsoever. In any event, welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. It is a Monday, of course, so Rumors not open tonight, but they'll be starting tomorrow night. Ryan Dalton is in town all week long. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. So, you know, I want to talk about the New York Rangers, because they, you know, pretty much came out about a month ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, Ezzy, and they came out and said, we're going to be sellers.
Yep.
We are going to sell. We are not, our roster as currently constructed is not good enough in this day and age in the NHL, so you're going to see some of our bigger name players get traded. And they were certainly, Jeff Gorton, general manager, was a man of his words. And this is what the Rangers have done to position themselves and rebuild their roster. They've acquired, in addition to their own draft picks, two first-round picks for this year, two second-round picks for this year, a third-round pick for this year. They've acquired Vladislav Namestnikov, who's certainly an NHL player, and then some. Ryan Spooner, who's an NHL player. Brett Howden and Libor Hajek, who we talked about last segment. I mean, Rob O'Gara, Igor Rykov, these are all prospects, but these are Ryan Lindgren, another prospect. They have, in the span of about a three-week period, reset their entire direction of their franchise. And this is how you rebuild on a fly. You look at other teams throughout the NHL, the Vancouver Canucks come to mind, the Arizona Coyotes come to mind, the Buffalo Sabres come to mind, who are just relatively incompetent with how they rebuild their franchises. They have to be sitting back, and the fan bases in those three cities have to be sitting back and saying, look at the job that Jeff Gorton did in New York. Look at the assets that they traded out and the draft picks and the assets they got back. Why can't we do that? Just kudos to Jeff Gorton for the job he did at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think he's done a pretty good job, Drew. And, you know, Ryan Spooner is a really good player. And you mentioned Vladislav Namestnikov. I mean, he's still relatively young, and he's going to be a big part of the future for the Rangers. And you mentioned the first-round picks that they got. They got a second-round pick, or was it two second-round picks that they got? So
they end up with two second-round picks as a result of the various trades.
Right, and that's how they're going to have to rebuild this up, as you just mentioned. And the Jets are a great example of how, if you're patient and you develop the right way, then the payoff is where the Jets are at right now, competing for the Central Division. But let's be honest here. I mean, the Rangers did it kind of in a non-traditional way, but I like the return that they've got. And non-traditional meaning that most teams don't issue a statement two weeks or 3 weeks before the trade deadline.
Yeah.
They were basically softening the blow when the trades were going to come, right?
They treated their fan base as mature adults, and they acted on what they said they were going to do. Now, there's no guarantee they draft well, but the more chances you have, the more opportunities you have, the more likely you are to draft well. And the Rangers did a very nice job at that today. That's just what I wanted to say about the Rangers. Mm-hmm. Now, Sean, the New Jersey Devils have been one of the great stories in the NHL this year, sort of flying under the radar, given what the Golden Knights are doing. But nobody really thought the Devils were going to be a playoff team. But lo and behold, they certainly sit in a playoff spot here on trade deadline day.
Helps when you get the first overall pick.
It certainly does. I thought the Devils did have a nice little trade deadline. This isn't a team that, you know, needs to mortgage the future because – you know, they're not at that point in their development. But you acquire Michael Grabner, you acquire Patrick Maroon, you sort of tell your dressing room, guys, you've
done
a great...
By the way, Michael Grabner, empty net specialist.
Empty net specialist, 7 empty net goals this year. Whatever you think about that, and that's obviously a higher number. I don't think the next closest guy has 3 or 4 this year. That means he's on the ice when your team is protecting a lead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a knock on him. It's just a sort of a weird quirk. But the Devils, from my perspective, did a nice job here grabbing Grabner from the Rangers in exchange for a second-round pick and Igor Rykov, and grabbing Patrick Maroon from the Edmonton Oilers in exchange for J.D. Dudek and a third-round pick. Ezzy, I know you're a big Devils fan. Sean, your thoughts on what the Devils did at this trade deadline, sort of just not mortgaging the future, but sort of solidifying what has been a very solid season, sort of an unexpectedly solid season for the Devils.
Yeah, I think if you just look at the roster and where they sit in the standings, I believe they own the first wild card spot in the East right now.
That's correct.
I don't think they're catching Boston, Toronto. So regardless, you look at what they've done to their roster, they've added depth, they've added some size, they've added some toughness, and they're just going to try to stay afloat, I believe, and get into the playoffs, and when they're there, see if they can do some damage. They've had a surprisingly wonderful season. I believe they believe in themselves, and they're going for it. They're going to see if they can make some moves, and you know, some of the moves they made midseason, acquiring Sammy Vatanen. I think they're poised and maybe not ready to go on a run, but they want to do some damage.
No, Sean, you just mentioned the size and toughness that Patrick Maroon brings, and that to me is why I like this move so much. Because when you think of the Devils, they've got lots of skill. They mm-hmm. they can score, but it's a smaller team when you think of guys like Miles Wood and Jesper Bratt and even Kyle Palmieri is not a huge player. They're kind of a smaller skilled team. That's mm-hmm. what their identity is. They're a fast skilled team now, and you know, when you think back to those Devils teams that won Stanley Cups, I mean, there isn't a Turner Stevenson on this team. There isn't a Jim McKenzie or a Ken Danico on this team. So I think Patrick Maroon, you know, adds a lot of size and goal scoring to this team, even though, you know, like I said, I mean, the Devils' problems right now aren't scoring goals. I mean, Taylor Hall's having a great year. Mm-hmm. Nico Hischier's having a great rookie year. And they're good up the middle with Pavel Zacha. Travis Zajac has been their third-line center. Brian Boyle's obviously the guy that obviously has the size on this team. So, you know, Michael Grabner, goal scorer, fast. And Patrick Maroon, same thing, can score goals, and he's physical, maybe not the fastest guy. So I agree with you, Drew. I mean, the Devils quietly made some good moves here mm-hmm. and didn't give up too much.
Also, Grabner, top of the league in 5-on-5 goals, so maybe looking to bolster their 5-on-5 play as well.
We've talked about the battle for the final wild card spots in the Eastern Conference.
The thing, I just want to throw in one thing. The one thing that concerns me a little bit is Corey Schneider's health. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll be back before the playoffs start if the Devils do make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And Keith Kincaid's done a nice job, but they need a healthy Schneider.
Absolutely need it. To have any hope. I don't expect that they're going to be able to pull off an upset, but any hope to have to pull off an upset relies on Corey Schneider getting healthy. You know, we've looked at the battle for the Eastern Conference wild card spots all season long because the top three in the Atlantic have been set and the other teams in the Atlantic have sucked. So, you know, as we sit here on the trade deadline day, who are your favorites for the last two wild card spots coming out of the Metropolitan Division more than likely? Is it New Jersey and Columbus now? Columbus was very active today.
Yeah, Carolina's fallen off a little bit.
Carolina's fallen off. They only made a minor trade in acquiring Greg McKegg from the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for Josh Juris. The Islanders acquire Chris Wagner and Brandon Davidson. They extend Josh Bailey for 6 years.
Yep.
Is it Columbus and New Jersey your favorites to win the wild card spots?
Yeah, they are, Drew, because Islanders just aren't good enough defensively. And, you know, you keep thinking that the Islanders are going to make a push, and Columbus has definitely, you know, struggled here. What are they, 4-5-1 in their last 10?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be the Devils and Columbus for those last two spots. We talked about Carolina. You know, they've lost their last two games. I think they've only won 3 of their last 10. And then Florida, I think, is just too far back. They're 5 points behind Columbus. So most likely I expect New Jersey and Columbus to hang on to those last two wild card spots. But we'll see. I mean, the Islanders have a lot of offensive talent, but it just seems like they have to win games 4-3 or 5-4. So I think it's going to be tough for New York.
Capitals are currently leading the Metropolitan Division, Sean. They were pretty quiet. They had sort of a couple depth defensemen in Mikael Kempney coming over from Chicago and Jakub Jerebek coming over from the Montreal Canadiens. Didn't have a ton of cap room, so that probably impacted mm-hmm. Their trade deadline. This is a team that last year won the trade deadline, quote-unquote, in acquiring Kevin Shattenkirk. They do nothing relatively this year, just quietly, and they're atop the Metropolitan Division. Are we maybe not paying enough attention to the Washington Capitals as we get into the stretch run here?
I think it's easy to overlook them when on a day like today when there's so many teams being thrown at you and so many transactions and you're following who's moving who and where they're going. And so building up to this week, it's kind of easy to overlook them. But then you look in the standings and you look at what they've done this season and they are impressive. They're a very good team, obviously led by Alex Ovechkin, Nick Backstrom, and then in the goaltending situation, Braden Holtby. A very good team. We talked about that series with the Maple Leafs last year. That was one of the most entertaining series of the postseasons, I thought. It was great. Whether they're overlooked or not, I think it's just a foregone conclusion. They'll get in the playoffs, and then once they're in the playoffs, I think that's when everyone starts to really focus on the Washington Capitals.
I'll tell you what'll be really entertaining, and it hasn't happened, I think, since 2012, is a playoff series between arch rivals Philadelphia Flyers and Pittsburgh Penguins. They're currently 2-3 in the Metropolitan Division. If the Flyers and the Penguins meet each other in the first round of the playoffs, watch out, because that was probably the bloodiest battle that we've seen in the playoffs in the last number of years.
It's going to be like the Royal Rumble, Drew.
Well, I mean, you remember it was, you know,
or Survivor Series.
It was actually my wedding weekend. If you remember the when they had the huge brawl between.
I don't really remember your wedding weekend. I was pretty juiced.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you had a good time there. Ezzy, keep in mind, brought all of one shirt to my wedding.
No, it wasn't one shirt. It was one dress shirt.
One dress shirt for 3 days worth of events. I'm not sure what your game plan there was, but
yeah, and then I got a stain on it and had to buy a new shirt.
It was also getting a little sweaty. You know, it was hot. It was Kentucky. You know,
Schwitz.
You're a Schwitzer, so exactly. You bring a couple
so
extra shirts.
You
bring a couple extra shirts for you there, big boy, is all we're saying. Paul Gackle of the San Jose Mercury News joins us next to talk about the Sharks' moves at the trade deadline. They acquired the Natural. We talk about to Paul about what that does to the Sharks' chances. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Monday evening, you're listening to a special trade deadline edition of NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberger with you in studio here at TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the San Jose Mercury News, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Paul Gackle. Paul, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing very well, Paul. But how about yourself? How was trade deadline for you? You've been able to breathe since then?
Pretty good. You know, yeah, it's been a pretty hectic day, no doubt about it. Just holed up here in my hotel room in St. Paul, but you know, I still haven't changed out of my pajama pants, so that doesn't suck.
That's the same thing I have done. I've been to the office all day, though. They really looked at me a little bit cross-eyed there, but whatever. That's their problem, not mine.
Not a bad way to live.
Hey, I can't complain. Paul, obviously we brought you on to talk about the moves the Sharks made at the trade deadline. The headlining move, of course, was the acquisition of Evander Kane from the Buffalo Sabres in exchange for Dan O'Regan. He's a prospect, a 2020 fourth round pick, and a 2019 conditional second round draft pick that could become a first round draft pick, depending on if Evander Kane re-signs with San Jose or not. Your thoughts on the price that the Sharks paid for Evander Kane?
Well, I actually thought it was a pretty good price at the end of the day. You know, it didn't seem like the type of deal on the surface that the Sharks were going to pull off at the trade deadline this year, because basically since the first day of training camp, General Manager Doug Wilson's been pretty adamant that this was not a year that he was going to give away, you know, prospects and draft picks for a rental. You know, a lot of question about whether they go out and get some scoring in the wake of Patrick Marleau signing with the Toronto Maple Leafs in the offseason. And he kept on repeating that line, you know, right up until last week when I talked to him in Nashville. And it wasn't that he was being misleading or anything like that. I think that he was pretty sincere in that statement. But I think at the end of the day, there just weren't a lot of teams that were all that interested in paying the price for Evander Kane. And, you know, when you look at what the Boston Bruins wound up paying to get Rick Nash, you know, what was it, a first-round pick, a fourth, and two roster players and a prospect, you look at what the Sharks gave up for Kane. Let's say he does not return and leaves in the offseason. you know, a second and a fourth and a prospect that, quite frankly, wasn't really going to probably factor in here in San Jose because he didn't seem like he was in Pete DeBoer's good books at the end of the day. I'd say that's a pretty good price for a player of Kane's magnitude. Then if you do wind up signing him long-term, you know, you're willing to give up the first round pick in that case. So I feel like the Sharks were really able to take advantage of, you know, the quote unquote character issues that have sort of followed Kane around throughout his career and wound up, you know, look at the guy, he's 26 years old versus what the Boston Bruins paid to get Rick Nash. I think that's a pretty good deal.
Paul, is Evander Kane a rental for all intents and purposes, or is there a chance that the San Jose Sharks are going to sign Evander Kane after the season?
Well, I get the impression that they'd probably like to sign him. I'm not sure if they would have gone out and made this move if it was just purely a rental without the potential to sign there. But I think, you know, they've heard what's attached to this guy and probably want to see if he's a good fit for their room and vice versa. So I think it's one of those things where, you know, the price for him as a rental made sense, but the bonus factor that you get those inside negotiations and maybe you can haul him in and sign him long term, I do think they like that. And they have over $20 million in cap space coming up available, you know, over the summer. So, you know, they could probably sign him and then still have the dough left in the wallet to go after John Tavares, which is what I think they're really eyeing in the summertime. And, you know, having probably a 26-year-old scoring winger on board, you know, might make that all the more appealing to John Tavares in the summer.
Paul, it's always fun to just kind of speculate where players fit in and who they'll mesh with. And I'm just curious, from your perspective, you know this team, the Sharks team, a whole lot better than we do. Where do you see Evander sliding in where he can maybe be the most successful?
I think they'll probably slide him in with Joe Pavelski. Those guys played together in the KHL during the 2012-2013 lockout, so that seems like an immediate place that would make sense. But I'll tell you what, you kind of wish Joe Thornton wasn't on the shelf right now, because they've had a rotating door on the Thornton-Pavelski line for the last couple of years here. And Hurdle was there the year they went to the Stanley Cup final, but they dropped him down to center last year. And this year he's been playing with Logan Couture, filling that Patrick Marleau spot. So they've been, I think they skated 9 different players last year on that line and something like 6 earlier this year until Jumbo got hurt. Boy, that would have been fun to see Kane play with Joe Thornton. So, yeah, I know Doug Wilson, you know, talked to him last week. He's still expecting Joe Thornton back later this year. That's not a guarantee. That's an expectation, because that's the timeline that Joe Thornton has set for himself, and he's kind of proved himself to be somewhat of a freakish athlete when it comes to recovering from those things. So they're hoping he's back, and it would really be fun to see a player of Kane's ilk with Thornton, because I feel like Thornton really hasn't had that kind of a wingman on the left side with the type of speed and also the hard game on the forecheck that Evander Kane has, and I feel like he'd be the perfect piece to fill that group out. So we'll see if Thornton's able to get back here before the end of the season.
Paul Gackle is our guest on NHL This Week. Paul covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. You're listening to TSN 1290, 20 minutes before the top of the hour. Paul, you know, what does the addition of Evander Kane do for the ceiling of the San Jose Sharks? I mean, they're in a dogfight in the Pacific Division. They're in a dogfight just to be a playoff team battling with those other teams for the Pacific Division. Or a wild card spot. So, what does the addition of Evander Kane do for that ceiling of the San Jose Sharks?
Well, I'll tell you what. When I came back to my hotel room here in St. Paul last night after the game against the Minnesota Wild, the Sharks lost 3-2 in overtime. I was convinced that they were going to have a tough time getting into the playoffs this year. They got outshot 31-11 in the last two periods of that game, and that's coming off a 7-1 loss in Nashville and a 3-1 loss in Chicago on Friday night. And you saw this Sharks team, you know when teams lose that player, that big star player, you know, there's that bump, there's that extra juice in the room, and they're able to get by and play some pretty good hockey for, you know, a stretch of time. And I think that's what we were seeing out of the San Jose Sharks without Joe Thornton. In the immediate aftermath, you know, there was kind of just a lot of will and determination, and I felt like maybe they kind of hit their wall with that and maybe came back down to earth a little bit going through the Central Division, which is obviously, you know, that's a tough trip going through St. Louis, Nashville, Minnesota, and Chicago for anyone. But it seemed like maybe they'd run out of their juice and what they could do without a player of Joe Thornton's caliber. And now all of a sudden you inject Evander Kane back into that lineup. You know, that's some of that scoring punch that they really need. And, you know, you look at this Pacific Division race, it isn't the Central Division race. And you go, you know, maybe that's the extra little thing that this team needs to get over the hump in a race with, you know, Anaheim and Calgary. You know, Calgary's holding on to a playoff spot now. So maybe, and the way the St. Louis Blues are going, and, you know, they make the trade with Winnipeg today, you know, maybe three out of the Pacific do make it in. It hadn't been looking like that for most of the season. So, you know, maybe this is enough to get them over the hump against, you know, over like an LA Kings, or we'll see where Anaheim goes. And then once you get into the playoffs in the Pacific Division, I think it's kind of wide open because, you know, I don't really know what to expect from the Vegas Golden Knights in a seven-game series, and I don't want to take anything away from what they've done, but I do think that there is a difference between, you know, going around the league and playing a different team, you know, every single night versus, okay, now we're in a seven-game series. You have to beat a team four times in seven games. There's matchups, there are adjustments. It's just a different animal. And so I do feel like the Pacific Division's wide open. Maybe if Joe Thornton comes back and he's playing well, now all of a sudden you've got Evander Kane in the mix, you know, maybe they can go through a couple rounds. So I think this does raise the ceiling. Like before, you know, coming into yesterday, I was looking at this group and going, you know, this is going to take a lot of work just to get into the playoffs, and where do you go from there? And now I look at it and I go, well, you know, maybe there's something they can do here.
And, Paul, can't you also throw in, you know, the schedule right now? I was just taking a look at the Sharks' schedule, and they have a six-game homestand coming up, no back-to-backs, and you've got Edmonton, Chicago, and Detroit, three non-playoff teams. You've also got Columbus, St. Louis, and Washington, with the exception of, you know, Washington, who's in a...
Washington, everybody's struggling in that group. You're right.
Right, and, you know, I was going to say, though, Columbus and St. Louis are still, you know, in the playoff discussion. I believe Columbus is still holding down that last wildcard spot in the East, but when you consider there's no back-to-backs, I believe you've got a three-day break in there between Columbus and St. Louis in early March, though. Is it starting to look even better when you consider that schedule's looking pretty good, too?
Well, that's favorable, no doubt about it. But the other thing that I look at, and I was looking at this yesterday after the overtime loss here in Minnesota, is the very last week in March, you have a nearly identical road trip where they go Chicago, St. Louis, Nashville, and Vegas. And I think you kind of want a little bit of a cushion going into that thing, because that, well, it's going to be, you know, when you go to Nashville and Vegas, that's going to be a tough couple days for the writers, you know what I mean? But
you're saying St. Paul isn't that same sort of trouble?
Not quite, but that's going to be a tough road trip. So I think you're going to want a little bit of a cushion.
Well, hold on. Sneaky Pete's is a pretty good place, Paul.
Yeah, but that's in Minneapolis. That's not St. Paul.
Well, it's the Twin Cities.
Well, Mickey's Diner, that's my spot in St. Paul. I had breakfast there yesterday, so that's what I needed on a trade deadline, sort of a weekend. I don't know what I would have done if I was in Nashville for this thing. But probably wouldn't have been writing today.
You might have still been in your pajamas, though.
Yeah. I would have probably been at Tootsie's with my laptop open. That's probably how it would have gone down. But, you know, yeah, this is an opportunity now for them to you know, this stretch here to maybe build up a little bit of a cushion for that road trip. I agree, there's some winnable games there. You know, even though Columbus is in a playoff spot, you know, they're definitely a team that's had their challenges this season. And, you know, same thing with the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, I feel like you never know how a guy is going to mesh chemistry-wise when you only have, like, 19 games left on the schedule to get it together, right? That's the other thing about this. I mean, look at how long it took before Matt Duchene, you know, really started to fit in with that Ottawa Senators group. You know, maybe they wouldn't be, you know, talking, you know, in the position that they were at the trade deadline, you know, talking about trading Erik Karlsson if, you know, you if it didn't take so long to mesh. So you always wonder about that. But I also think that a team that's coming off a road trip like the Sharks were, where you're starting to question yourself a little bit, and that's got to hurt the confidence in the room when you go up 2-0 and then you get outshot 31-11 over the last 45 minutes of the game. You know, just I think getting this kind of a player added to the, you know, it gives that extra little life into the room.
Paul, I'm just curious. I'm just going to assume that it's been a mixed emotions with regards to the acquisition of Evander Kane from the fan base?
That's kind of tough to gauge. I feel like 2/3 are excited. I feel like, you know, one of the things with this Sharks team is, you know, Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, and Joe Pavelski, you know, great group of guys, say what you will. But there hasn't been a lot of new life and fresh blood. I mean, there's been these up-and-comers that have come up and joined the team, the Timo Meyers and the Kevin LeBanks sort of around the edges. But it's been a while since the Sharks have really gone out and made a splash in terms of a name player. So I think there is some excitement in the fan base just to see some fresh blood in the mix and go, okay, what's this going to look like? And people are talking about what you guys were talking about. What line's he going to play on, you know? And, you know, going through that whole thing. So I think there's some excitement there. But then obviously a guy that, you know, a guy like Kane comes attached with some question marks. Although, I mean, everybody I've talked to in Buffalo, and I don't know what you guys have heard, but everybody that I've talked to in Buffalo seemed to think that a lot of those things were overblown. Now, I'm not saying they were overblown when he was in Winnipeg, but the understanding that I have is that, you know, in the last couple of years that he was in Buffalo, even though there was this talk of this fight in practice, which those things happen from time to time, the general sense is that he was a really good teammate there. You know, he was in Winnipeg, he's a young kid, and that was also a locker room. You know, it was a young room for the most part, too, right? I mean, that Winnipeg Jets group at the time, I think now, you know, Blake Wheeler is definitely, you know, a great leader and a great presence in that room. But that Winnipeg Jets locker room at that moment in time didn't have like a 38-year-old Joe Thornton or, you know, a 33-year-old Joe Pavelski. These guys who have been around the block and been through the wars and been with the franchise forever. You know, a guy like Joe Thornton's a big presence in this room. I have a tough time believing that Evander Kane can come into that Sharks room and really mess things up with Joe Thornton around.
Paul Gackel covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Paul, we'll appreciate your time this evening. We'll let you get back to some quality pajama time.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Paul. We'll do it again real soon. When we come back, we give some winners and losers from today's NHL trade deadline. One segment to go. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
A hectic day all over the hockey world, a hectic day here at TSN 1290. But this is a fun day. This is the kind of day that you enjoy doing radio when you got so much going on, when you have chaos and trades and the hometown Winnipeg Jets make a big splash. It's kind of a fun day, a busy day, but a fun day here in the hockey radio business. And then, of course, tomorrow night, the Jets and the Predators, you know, you don't want to overstate the importance of the game because, you know, it is just one game, but they're the two best teams in my mind in the Western Conference, and they're doing battle atop the Central Division, and it's going to be an entertaining contest in what I expect will be an absolutely electric Bell MTS Place tomorrow night. Game time, 7 o'clock. Coverage begins here on the station all day, of course, but the afternoon ride starts at 3 with Hustler and Rick, and then they'll lead you right into Kevin O. and the you know, the Jets game itself. It should be fun. Some winners and losers from you gentlemen today as we put a bow on what has been a busy NHL trade deadline.
That's the Winnipeg Jets have to be one of the winners, don't they?
In my mind, yeah.
And I think I would throw in the Tampa Bay Lightning in there as well. They pick up Ryan McDonagh, who now becomes you know, one of their top four defensemen. They pick up JT Miller, and we talked about who they had to give up. They had to give up Namestnikov and some prospects and a draft pick. I know you were pretty critical of the Dallas Stars, Drew. For me, the Dallas Stars have to be one of the losers because, you know, right now the Dallas Stars are in a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
They're holding down one of those last wild card spots. But they've been having trouble with their secondary scoring, and I don't think they're good enough defensively right now. We just saw the Jets put five pucks past Kari Lehtinen.
In one period.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm pretty surprised that Jim Neal didn't do anything, and I think Jim Neal is one of the best general managers in the entire league. So, for me, Dallas has got to be one of the losers, and you know the Jets are up there with Tampa Bay and Nashville and the Rangers for me as winners.
Dallas is the only team in the NHL, if you look back over the last 2 weeks, three mm-hmm. weeks, month, whatever sort of time frame you want, they're the only team in the NHL that hasn't made any transaction whatsoever, not even a waiver claim, not even placing a player on waivers. The Dallas Stars did absolutely nothing over the last month, which maybe tells you that they're sort of just happy to be in the playoffs, but obviously they didn't think that their roster as currently constructed deserved to be bolstered with any big moves today at the deadline or in the weeks leading up to the deadline.
I would probably throw Columbus in there as well as a loser. I thought Columbus could have done more.
Well, Jack Johnson had requested a trade. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. There's talk that maybe they were looking to re-sign him. They didn't do either, so you wonder if the talks are far enough progressed that they think they're going to re-sign him, and that's why they didn't want to trade him. But anytime you have a UFA go to market, you know, you don't get anything back as an asset. Detroit, I mean, we praise Detroit for what they got for Tomas Tatar, but not trading Mike Green, pending unrestricted free agent, albeit he's injured. But still, you get a list from him, and he's got
a
no...
Yeah, but he would be back in time for the playoffs.
He would be, and he's got a no-trade and a no-move clause, so maybe that complicated matters. But I still think you have to look at exploring or trading a guy like Mike Green, because we know the Red Wings aren't going anywhere. They're not going to be a playoff team this year. They're going to lose him for nothing at season's end. So I was a little surprised that Mike Green didn't go anywhere whatsoever.
I'd throw the Devils in there as well, Sean, as far as being winners. Mm-hmm. And sure, you guys know I'm a Devils fan, but I think when you pick up Patrick Maroon and you pick up Michael Grabner and you don't have to give up too much, I think that's pretty good.
Sean?
Yeah, I think Tampa Bay out east killed it. You look at what the Rangers did. Impressive. They said they were going to rebuild, and they started retooling, and they acquired a pretty decent package of picks and prospects along the way. And then out west, all biases aside, I have to say the Winnipeg Jets, for a number of reasons, they bolstered up the defense.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in a bona fide centerman, not someone that you can plug in and hope that it works out. They brought in a bona fide, experienced centerman mm-hmm. who can play the wing. And this is something, I don't think we've discussed this. Paul Stastny, he forfeited his no-move clause to come to the Jets. So the Jets win again. Because how many times have we sat here and talked about the fact that Winnipeg's a team where people don't want to go, and it's the top of their no-move list. So the fact that a bona fide player shed that no-movement clause, I think it's a tremendous win for the Jets organization.
That's it for this special trade deadline edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to our guests for joining us, Paul Gackle of the San Jose Mercury News and Josh Green, Winnipeg Jets analyst here on TSN 1290. In case you missed any of the program, it's going to be available for download via our website, illegalcurve.com, via TSN1290.ca. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be sent directly to you each and every week. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris, for Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.